the Israeli narratives, it has been defeated a lot. The people, they start asking their own governments about what is happening, why you are supporting those criminals of war, the Israelis. And after 2 years today, we are witnessing the winning of the Palestinian narrative, and that is because of you. You have marched into the streets and told the international community what is the realities over there, and because of the innocent blood which has been shed by those criminals inside Gaza.
South Africa also faces the challenge of its citizens who are part of the Israeli military force. Despite legislation banning that, the country is yet to prosecute any of these mercenaries. Hamas says governments need to take action. They say many countries have approached them to retrieve bodies of Israeli troops killed in Gaza.
A lot of countries around the world came to us asking about their people. I don't know why if someone is Israeli when he is killing Palestinian, he became suddenly a French or an Italian or a Russian. Suddenly they came, they are negotiating how to get our people. Why you are allowing your people to fight or to kill Palestinians? If they are your people, you have to stop them from participating in this terrorist organization, the so-called IDF.
While Hamas is committed to the current temporary ceasefires and exchange of prisoners, an end to violence will only be achieved through a comprehensive agreement which includes the Gaza Strip, the West Bank and Al-Quds.
We are talking about a political conflict, and this political conflict cannot be solved by military tools. They have attacked the Palestinians now for more than 100 years. And the Palestinians insisting on struggling, on raising their voices, they have to accept that we have ambitions, we have dreams of independence, of freedom and dignity.
The Israeli regime has threatened to expand its deadly bombing campaign to southern Gaza when the temporary truce ends. But the Palestinian resistance is determined to stand steadfast in the face of any such adventurism. Hassan Siriep, Cape Town.
Nation, martyrdom, sacrifice and commitment. These are words deeply familiar to the Iranian people. They have been under heavy Western pressure and unilateral illegal sanctions since the victory of the Islamic Revolution 44 years ago. The world's powers have used all means to stop Iran from achieving progress, including the assassination of its scientists, specifically those who would have helped the country to make nuclear advancements. The assassinations, which have been orchestrated by the U.S. and implemented by the Israeli regime, have been condemned by many countries around the world. In the capital, Tehran, a gathering was held on Wednesday to commemorate those martyred scientists. The participants say that the Israeli regime does not want a powerful Iran.
We are here on behalf of the people and the country of Bolivia to pay our respects to the martyrs of Iran and all of those who were killed by the imperialist attacks of Israel, which is trying to prevent the progress of the people of Iran and its scientists in the nuclear field for its own interests. We believe that Iran should continue its scientific development in the nuclear field because this issue is important for the progress of any society.
America planted the Zionist regime in the region as a base for the West. For this reason, the West tried from the beginning to make this regime always more advanced than the countries in the region. America and Israel targeted the Islamic Republic, which has been trying to gain power and independence. The independence of the Islamic Republic of Iran angered the West. That is why they try to weaken Iran in any way possible and stop Iranian projects at any level. One of the most important things they tried was assassinations. These assassinations were carried out by Israel Mossad, which is known as the largest terrorist organization in the world.
Iran is a country that, despite international pressure and the assassination of its scientists, has become stronger day by day and has shown that it has never retreated from its ideals and values. Farzan Ashuryun, Tehran.
People took to the streets of Pakistan to express their solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine who are confronting Israeli atrocities.
Free, free Palestine! Free, free Palestine!
Who
about humanity, they must stand with the Palestinian women, they must stand with the innocent Palestinians who are demanding for their right to defend themselves.
Being a nuclear power, we should stand with Israel, with Palestine, because it's not only the responsibility of Iran, it's the responsibility of all the Muslims.
The International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people has been observed annually on November 29th since 1977, based on a call by the United Nations.
I want to show my solidarity and unity with the people of Gaza and Palestine. I believe that, inshallah, one day the Aqsa and Palestine will be free. Genocide happening in Palestine, children are being killed, women are being killed, and I just want to say that we want justice.
In Pakistan, the International Day of Solidarity with Palestinian People is marked by various events and ceremonies that reaffirm Pakistan's solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Marking the International Day of Palestine in Pakistan serves as a platform for reinforcing enduring unity between the two nations. It symbolizes a shared commitment to common values such as justice, peace, and realization of the rights of the people of Palestine. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
The Palestinian Embassy in Moscow on Tuesday held a ceremony on the occasion of the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. In the meeting, Deputy Foreign Minister Mikhail Bogdanov read a message by President Vladimir Putin to his Palestinian counterpart Mahmoud Abbas on the occasion of the Solidarity Day. The message said the creation of a sovereign Palestine within the 1967 borders is a key condition for resolving the Palestine conflict. According to the Russian diplomat, the Russian Foreign Ministry has engaged in intense efforts to help resolve the humanitarian situation in Gaza through cooperation with Iran and other countries.
From the very beginning, we advocated for a cessation of hostilities in order to channel this unprecedented escalation into political context with the goal to agree on an immediate de-escalation of tension and establish negotiations on humanitarian issues. Our contacts with Iran on Palestine take place at all levels between presidents and foreign ministers. Iran and Russia have powerful positions in the Middle East to help the Palestinians restore their right to self-determination and the creation of a sovereign state.
On the eve of the Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people, Moscovites came to the Palestinian embassy and brought toys, flowers, and posters. In 1977, the UN General Assembly decided to observe November 29th annually as the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. On this day in 1947, the Assembly adopted a resolution on the partition of Palestine.
We are here today in solidarity with our people. For 75 years, Palestinians have suffered under Israeli Zionist occupation. Gaza has become a genocidal site in full view of the world, and no one is doing anything to stop the massacre of Palestinians. We demand our own Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital.
President Putin called it Russia's sacred duty to help people in Gaza. Since the latest escalation began, Russian aircraft have delivered over 57 tons of humanitarian aid to the population of Gaza. Humanitarian aid is being transferred to representatives of the Egyptian Red Crescent Society, who send it to Gaza.
The International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people coincides with Israel's deadly war in Gaza and its intensified atrocities against the people in the occupied territories. However, the determination of Palestinians to resist the regime's aggression is increasing day by day. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Three Palestinian prisoners, including three female prisoners and 30 minors, have been released by the Israeli occupation authorities after midnight, the fourth batch of the exchange agreement with Hamas movement. The freed prisoners expressed their gratitude to the Palestinian resistance, whom they described as the prisoners' backbone. They added that the resistance will do their utmost to release prisoners, mainly women and minors.
Since the first day of the war, when we knew the resistance took Israelis as prisoners, we knew that we would be free. We have always trusted in the resistance. The resistance that's the backbone of the prisoners, Al-Quds, and all Palestine. We really knew we will be free. Today we're both happy and sad at the same time. Our freedom was achieved, but thousands of Palestinians had been martyred. Their blood is a debt on us. We will not forget this. We ask them to forgive us, and inshallah, all the prisoners will be released.
The majority of the minors had been held under the administrative detention without charge or trial. Those freed minors have talked about how the Israeli soldiers tortured them and how they confiscated all of their belongings, including the radios, so they would not know what was going on outside the prisons or anything about the Israeli war on Gaza.
When the Al-Aqsa flood operation was carried out, we were surprised by soldiers with oppression tools and dogs storming our cells and attacking and beating the prisoners. One of the prisoners from Beit Sira was in a cell next to the cell we were held. He was killed. Did you know about him? He was killed because of the torture, and they didn't offer him any first aid. We're grateful to the resistance. Thanks to Allah for the bless of the resistance and Hamas. Thanks to Allah for the bless of Al-Ghassam, without whom no one would have imagined to be free.
Hours before an initial four-day truce in Gaza Strip was set to expire, Hamas movement confirmed that the humanitarian pause will extend by 2 days. This means more humanitarian aid would be allowed into Gaza, and more captives will be released from both sides.
While the families of thousands of Palestinian prisoners are still hoping their loved ones would be freed, they also hope for the truce to be extended and the Israeli war on Gaza comes to an end. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
The Turkish foreign minister has criticized the UN Security Council for its inability to call for an effective ceasefire in the Gaza Strip with one voice. Speaking during a Security Council session, Hakan Fidan said Israel's attacks against Gaza amount to war crimes.
Israel's brutal attacks on Gaza and its population constitute war crimes. We urge all civilized nations to disassociate themselves from those crimes. In such dire times, we need strong global institutions to enforce international law and protect moral compass of humanity. Unfortunately, the Security Council, which entrusted by the UN Charter to do so, time and again failed to fulfill its responsibility to maintain international peace and security. It was unable to call for an effective ceasefire with one voice.
Experts have also warned that the UN Security Council may lose its credibility. On the sidelines of the UN Security Council's meeting, a statement was made by the ministerial committee assigned by the Joint Arab-Islamic Extraordinary Summit that was recently held in Saudi Arabia. The statement said a truce deal regarding Israel's war on Gaza is not enough. It called for establishing a lasting ceasefire. The double standards of the UN Security Council have always been criticized by Turkey. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has said that the fate of the world should not be in the hands of a limited number of countries. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need, which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
From Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
And welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, we're now on day 57 of the Israeli genocide on Gaza. More than 200 people have been killed, with 600 being injured in the last 24 hours. This after the seven-day genocide pause. What does it mean to take a pause in a genocide and then to return to right where you left off? Well, believe it or not, this is the world we are living in today. And during this pause, the U.S. made sure that the Zionist regime has been reloaded with the latest munitions, including the bunker-busting bomb, which is meant to penetrate hard surfaces at a depth. Now, just imagine what that can do while hitting a refugee camp or an apartment building. This is the state of Gaza and the world today. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Ken Stone, executive member, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, Hamilton, Ontario. And Rick Sterling, investigative journalist out of Walnut Creek, California. Thank you both for being with me. Well, Ken, let's start off with you. Why do you think that the Israeli regime didn't renew the truce?
The Israeli regime was opposed to the truce in the first place. I believe it was forced into having a truce, first of all, because the United States was putting great pressure on it to have a truce, because the populations around the world were rising up spontaneously in the streets and demonstrating and calling on their governments to pressure Israel for a ceasefire. And I think that the U.S., wanted the Hamas to have a ceasefire, but they did not use the pressures that they could have to make sure that the ceasefire was permanent and was a permanent military ceasefire leading to a long-lasting, permanent, and just comprehensive deal for Israel-Palestine. And as a result, the genocide is continuing today, and the Israelis are the Israeli population has is on the side of Israel's government. Recent polls showed that up to 90% of Israelis approved of the attack on Gaza, and that's because for years the Israeli government has been turning more and more right-wing, and the current coalition that Netanyahu leads is composed of people who are ultra-right-wing, racist, many supported by the settler movement in the West Bank, and these are zealots. These are people who want blood. They want to destroy the Hamas once and for all. They want to ethnically cleanse all of Israel. They want to destroy and demolish the Al-Aqsa Mosque as the last remaining symbol of the Palestinian people, and they want to create a third temple. These are like the zealots who brought the wrath of the Roman Empire down on the heads of Judea 2,000 years ago in a rebellion in 66 AD, and in that rebellion, the second temple was destroyed and the Jews right. were dispersed. And this is the kind of catastrophe that they're trying to bring about on the modern state of Israel today.
Mm. Well, Rick, your thoughts, because we saw during this pause that there were hostages that were freed on both sides. I mean, does the regime want its hostages free or not? Or have the videos which have been coming out of those who have been freed with Hamas members been a little bit too damaging to it?
I think the Netanyahu regime is under internal pressure from the families of the hostages, so that was one factor. And the other factor is the immense amount of public outrage around the world, which Ken was talking about, that they needed a let up from this. And so they managed to get some hostages released by Hamas, and some of the Palestinian prisoners were were also released, I noticed that over 70% of the Palestinian prisoners were 18 or under, and over half of them had never been convicted of a crime. So this just shows the discrepancy. But in any case, I think the ceasefire was kind of necessary. It was necessary to have a pause in the genocide, and now they're going right back at it.
Yeah, it is quite unbelievable. Well, Ken, I mean, why has the United States resupplied the Israeli regime with more arms, even during this pause?
Well, the United States regards Israel as an asset, a military base, if you will, a huge military base in the Middle East. It's part of its empire around the world, and the U.S. wishes to maintain its hegemony in West Asia along with the rest of the world. It hasn't yet realized that we are into a multipolar world now where it is not the only superpower in a unipolar world. And so the U.S. came to the rescue of Israel by sending it all kinds of arms, and also to help mollify or to offset the economic cost of the war. The Israelis are suffering. The Israeli economy is suffering very badly from this war. It's costing hundreds of millions of dollars a day. 300,000 people are taken out of production. Farms are lying idle. The currency is taking a hit. There's all kinds of economic consequences, negative economic consequences to this war, which the U.S. is trying to ameliorate by sending billions of dollars in aid to Israel. The fact is that the U.S. could end this war tomorrow if it wanted, by one simple phone call telling from Genocide Joe to Netanyahu, saying, you know, we're going to not use our veto. We are not going to have your back. We are not sending any more arms. We are not sending any more money. Negotiate. Come to the table and bring about the just, lasting, and comprehensive deal that's been on the books of the UN since 1967. But unfortunately, the Americans are not prepared to do so, and they have given the green light to Israel to go ahead. And so, as Rick has said, the genocide is continuing.
Rick, in your perspective, what is the ultimate goal of the Israeli regime with this genocide?
Nakba too. They would love to drive 2.3 million Gazans into the Sinai and out of Israel, never to be returned. That is the goal. That is the dream. Short of that, since they tried that initially, and Washington gave it some level of agreement, but because of the quick response from Jordan and Egypt, they realized that was not viable, so they dropped that. At this point in time, I think Israel just wants to kill as many as possible. They want to make life that much more miserable. And even a friend of mine the other day was saying, well, why doesn't Egypt accept the refugees? So they still dream of doing this. They've taken one of the most congested places on earth, 2.3 million people in a tiny area. A lot of people don't realize just how tiny Gaza is, 5 miles by 25 miles, 2.25 million people. And now they've compressed them into about half that space. And now most recently, they're giving warnings to residents of Khan Yunus that it is now a bombing zone, and that they need to flee from there. So it's unmitigated a torture to the Palestinian people. And what are the goals of Tel Aviv? The ultimate goal would be to drive the people out of the country. And short of that, killing as many as they can get away with.
Ken, you heard what Rick said. I mean, killing as many as they can get away with. Let's look at that. Let's break that down a little bit. What do you think that that will mean to these Western regimes? Because you just talked about the United States, basically. It could stop it today if it wants to, but basically Israel is doing perhaps what it wants it to do. So what does it mean now at this point in time if Israel wants to take out all of the 2.3 million citizens of the Gaza Strip for these Western regimes? Do you think that they will put their foot down and at the end of the day force the regime to stop?
Well, I'm hoping so, and so do millions of people, tens of millions of people around the world. In my city here of Hamilton, I could go to a pro-Palestinian rally, march, demonstration every single day of the week, and this is being replicated across Canada and around the world. So many countries have responded to these pressures from the grassroots by withdrawing their ambassadors. I think 7 to 9 countries by now have done that. Others have made statements calling for a permanent ceasefire. Others are trying to put together diplomatic moves so that this moment of crisis can also be a moment of opportunity to create that just, lasting, and peaceful comprehensive deal for Israel-Palestine. I don't think at the beginning, if you had told me, if you had asked me this question, I would have said Israel can do almost anything it wants. But now, with masses of people in the streets putting pressure on their governments, and governments actually moving and talking and condemning and withdrawing ambassadors, I don't think, and the fact that Hamas is holding its own in this war, and not only holding its own, it's managing to kill Israeli soldiers, destroy tanks and other equipment. So my guess is that the Israelis are not going to win this war. They are not going to be able to wipe out the population of Gaza. But still, what will happen when it's over and there are 2 million people who are homeless, or whatever's left of the 2 million people? And Egypt says it's not going to take them. What is we don't know what the solution will be, but we hope it will be the solution based on Resolution 242 back in 1967 for a just, lasting, and peaceful settlement of the whole issue.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Rick, you heard what Ken was saying about basically that the regime isn't winning in Gaza. I mean, as a matter of fact, it has been humiliated in Gaza, that after all of this time, it really hasn't had military victories, but simply, yes, it has indulged in mass killing of civilians and destroyed civilian infrastructure. What does that mean when you have this fourth strongest military in the world being stuck in this tiny strip against this force that doesn't have an air force, doesn't have a navy? How do you assess this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you put your finger on it. They're in a tough place because they initially set the goal as destroying Hamas. Hamas is a social movement. It's not just, if they kill a few of the Hamas leaders, that's not going to destroy Hamas. And yet, if they stop beforehand, they will consider it a failure. But continuing the genocide, continuing the massacring of people, increasingly losing them support from around the world. Just yesterday, someone in Atlanta, a protester in Atlanta, Georgia, in the United States, set himself on fire in front of the Israeli consulate. He's got third-degree burns, and he's in critical condition in the hospital. So this is just a sign of the intensity of the opposition to these atrocities that now almost for the first time some Americans are seeing on TV and seeing on some mainstream TV. So I think Israel is in a lose-lose situation. What they're going to do to get out of it, it's unclear.
Well, you mentioned mainstream television. And Ken, I want to look at that because it's been interesting. The last few days, there have been some interesting pieces, even coming out of mainstream media and actually showing some of the realities on the ground there. How do you assess that? Are we looking at a certain transition, or is it because the wave against the Israeli regime has been so great with people standing up for the Palestinians that this mainstream media felt that they have to be able to show a little bit closer picture of the reality? Your assessment?
I think your latter point is correct. I have noticed it here in Canada on CBC and CTV and in the media. The discourse has changed, and people who were never seen before on TV, such as Palestinians, Palestinian organizers, leaders of the Muslim community and the Arabic community in Canada, suddenly are on TV, and they're speaking eloquently about this issue. The other night on CBC, I think it was, they had a big deal explaining what BDS was, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, a campaign to bring Israel to its knees and create a long-term solution to the problem. So, yes, the massive resistance of the peoples of the world to the Israeli genocide in Gaza is forcing a change in the discourse of politicians and in the media around the world, and that's a good thing.
Well, Rick, do you see this war now, this genocide, actually also being a tool in the hand of Netanyahu, using this to actually stay in power? Because if we look at leading up to this and the continual demonstrations against him, with many Israelis not satisfied with his performance, and of course after October 7th we had many who were not still. But how do you assess Netanyahu and connection to this prolonged situation that's happening in Gaza right now?
I think if Netanyahu and the people close to him knew that an attack from Hamas was coming, they never predicted what unfolded on October 7th, which was a total collapse of the Israeli military. And of course, it's been now documented in some places that many of the Israeli civilians were killed by the IDF in their random shooting from Apache helicopters and tanks on the ground. They weren't killed by Hamas at all. They were killed in the crossfire from the IDF, the Israel offensive forces, it should be called. But Netanyahu, of course, is the longest serving Israeli prime minister. He's been around a long time. He's been through a lot of conflicts. The person, he's waged countless wars against Gaza. He's waged countless massacres. This is the most extreme example, but in 2018, they mowed down peaceful protesters in the Global March of Return. People who were going in the thousands up to the Gaza border were just shot down in cold blood. 200 died and thousands were injured. So prior to that, Netanyahu even called it mowing the lawn. You need to mow the lawn every couple of years, comparing it to a suburban American household where you need to mow the lawn every couple of weeks. They were mowing the lawn by killing hundreds, if not thousands. And that's just a level of the dehumanization of Palestinians as seen. Israel is a racist state. There used to be a United General Assembly resolution that Zionism is racism, and it was a big mistake when that was withdrawn in the early 1990s, because it's absolutely true. Zionism is racism.
How likely do you see that coming back, that terminology, especially when we see what's going on around the world today and trying to put pressure on governments? Mm-hmm. Ken?
I think it's, you know, once you see this genocide unfolding before your very eyes, you can't unsee it, as they say. And I think people have recognized that the Israelis have a racist attitude towards Palestinians. They consider them Untermenschen, subhumans, and they treat them like as if they were insects. It's disgusting. But I would like to add one point, and that is we haven't yet talked, and probably we don't have time much, but about the chance of a wider war. We know that Israel has bombed Syria several times. We know that there have been attacks on U.S. military bases in Iraq and Syria, that Nasrallah has has captured two ships in the Red Sea and has been sending missiles against Eilat. There is a danger of a wider war as the genocide continues and intensifies. And we, as people of peace, anti-war activists, we are concerned that this war should, the attack on Gaza should end, because the other possibility is a wider regional war or even a confrontation between the great powers.
And well, let's end on that. Well, Rick, your thoughts on that. How likely do you see this situation expanding with more parties getting involved?
Mm-hmm. I'm really not sure. I think a lot of the parties do not want it to happen to expand for obvious reasons. Iran doesn't, Hezbollah and Lebanon doesn't, and I don't think the U.S. really wants it either. I think where we're at is, of course, the genocide occurring is just the tip of the iceberg. The root cause of all these problems is the occupation and Israeli apartheid, and right. It's really incumbent on the world to do what we did with South African apartheid, to mount massive protests and to force international organizations, to pressure international organizations to join that call, and force our governments to remove themselves from supporting Israel.
Okay. And on that note, thank you both for being with me on the Spotlight. Ken Stone, executive member, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, out of Hamilton, Ontario. And Rick Sterling, investigative journalist out of Walnut Creek, California. And thank you, viewers, for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
The Zionist regime remains the only regime in the world to automatically and systematically prosecute children in military courts. Yet world leaders say nothing. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East iWrote, over the last few days, Israeli regime authorities have released dozens of Palestinian child prisoners in exchange for Israeli hostages. Many people around the world seem to be asking, perhaps for the first time, why does Israel imprison so many Palestinian children? Since the Second Intifada in 2000, when Defense for Children International, Palestine DCIP, began tracking Palestinian children detained by the Zionist regime's military. Israeli forces have detained, interrogated, prosecuted, and imprisoned approximately 13,000 Palestinian children. Each year, the Israeli regime military detains between 500 and 700 Palestinian children. All Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, including children, have been subject to Israeli regime military law since 1967, when the Zionist regime annexed it. The Zionist settlers living in the same territory, however, are subject to Israeli civilian law, a crystal-clear example of apartheid, despite the fact that international norms affirm that civilians, including children, must never be brought before military courts. The fabricated regime of Israel remains the only regime in the world to automatically and systematically prosecute children in military courts. These children, who are almost all boys, range in age from 12, the age of criminal responsibility under Israeli regime military law, to 17, although the CIP has documented cases where children younger than 12 were detained and harassed by Israeli regime forces for hours. Under international law, a child is any person under the age of 18. Between 2016 and 2022, the CIP collected sworn affidavits from 766 Palestinian children detained by the Israeli regime military and prosecuted in Israeli military courts to track their experiences of ill treatment and torture at the hands of the Zionist regime forces. Thanks to that data, we can say confidently that denying the basic human rights of Palestinian children is business as usual for Israeli regime forces. 3 out of 5 of these children are detained from their homes in the middle of the night, according to documentation collected by the CIP. Israeli regime forces show up at a Palestinian family's home at 2 or 3 in the morning, break down the door, wake up the whole family, and drag the child out of his bed. At that moment, 75% of Palestinian children experience some form of physical violence at the hands of Israeli troops. After that, nearly all children are blindfolded and tied before being forced into an Israeli regime military vehicle en route to an interrogation center, often located in an illegal Israeli settlement. During this time, that child's parents have no idea where he's being taken or when he will come home. Upon arrival at an Israeli regime interrogation center, 80% of children are strip searched by Israeli troops. Then, an adult Israeli interrogator, speaking expert Arabic, interrogates the child without the presence of a family member or a lawyer. In fact, there is no right to a lawyer during interrogation under Israeli regime military law. Two-thirds of children are not properly informed of their rights, and 55% are forced to sign documents in Hebrew, a language they don't understand. The Zionist regime's interrogators place 1 in 4 children into pre-trial solitary confinement for the purpose of extracting a confession, a method deemed torture by the United Nations. All of this happens before a trial, also conducted by Israeli troops in a military court. The conviction rate is higher than 95%, a number that tells you all you need to know about the Zionist regime's military interest in justice. The most common charge against children is stone throwing, which carries a potential maximum sentence of up to 20 years. However, many Palestinians, including children, are detained by the Israeli military without charge or trial, meaning they are held indefinitely in Israeli regime military prisons, a practice known as administrative detention. The CIP has documented cases where Palestinian children are held in administrative detention for more than a year. The Zionist regime's military detention system at every point is designed to exert complete control over Palestinian children and their families. From the moment Israeli troops break into a Palestinian family's home in the middle of the night, children know that their parents cannot keep them safe. While many Palestinian children have been released from Israeli regime prisons recently, the Zionist regime forces have been busy conducting raids and arrests every night across the occupied West Bank. Even with the whole world watching, Israeli regime military brutality is operating with impunity, like clockwork, emboldened by the killing of more than 6,000 Palestinian children in Gaza, with only a handful of world leaders holding them accountable. Meanwhile, Wafa News Agency reported in clear violation of the terms of the exchange of prisoners, the Israeli occupation authorities rearrested the child prisoner, Nofto Hamad, 16, after she was supposed to be released recently in the second batch of exchange of prisoners. According to her father, Jad Hamad, from the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in the occupied Al-Quds, he told Wafa that the occupation forces had assaulted his daughter while she was being transported to Al-Quds to be released and was later transferred to Hadassah Hospital in Al-Quds after she was injured. He said he was not allowed to visit her in the hospital and was never informed about her situation, pointing out that the occupation authorities took her out of the hospital and returned her to prison, expressing concern for her health condition after she was taken to the hospital and assaulted. One of the colonists had objected to the release of Nofto, which is believed to be the reason for her rearrest. Hamad is the youngest child detained in the occupation prisons. She was arrested 2 years ago while leaving her school under the pretext of trying to assault one of the colonists and sentenced to 12 years in prison. Her name was included in the second batch of prisoners to be released by the Zionist regime in return for the release of 13 Israelis held in Gaza.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
IRIB English Radio.
Israel presses ahead with its indiscriminate strikes across Gaza, killing more civilians as the death toll from the regime's attacks exceeds 15,500. Iran condemns the U.S. for greenlighting Israel's genocide in Gaza, warning that Washington must bear the consequences of its support for the regime's crimes. and the Yemeni army targets two Israeli vessels in Bab el-Mandeb Strait as Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement intensifies its retaliatory attacks on Israel. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us. Houses are reduced to rubble, hospitals packed with casualties, and people are seeing no respite from the relentless bombardment. That's a picture of what's going on in Gaza, which is now under